A remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for February 18th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to the House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lencheski, please take the roll.
Members, you may unmute yourself when your name is called. Representative Fooley.
Lee, present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abaje.
Present.
Representative Esther Abaje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg, present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Representative Keith Frankie, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mark Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Rick Hansen, present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt. Representative Leon Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Leon Lilly, present. Representative Eric Lucero.
A high of 18 degrees today, yes.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran.
Present.
Representative Rena Moran, present. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
West, present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang.
Here.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Members, at the conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. A quorum is present. Representative Murphy, do you move the minutes for February 16th?
Mr. Chair, I do move the approval of the minutes as printed for the February 18th meeting, or for the February 17th meeting.
Thank you, Representative 16th. Murphy.
16th meeting.
Vice Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for February 16th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for February 16th are approved. Members, today we will hear from both Minnesota's public higher education systems on their HEPA reports and 2021 capital budget requests. They had also been asked to discuss the process of determining how building projects in HEPA are prioritized. But before we get started, I'd like to thank both Minnesota State and the University of Minnesota for their hospitality during our regional bonding tours last 2 years ago. Visiting campuses and seeing classroom and laboratory conditions firsthand had directly impacted the students and really show us how the work that we do over here at the Capitol really impact the state of Minnesota. We have allotted about 25 minutes for each presentation, followed by 15 minutes for member questions. We will start with Minnesota State. Welcome to the committee, Chancellor Malhotra. Please identify yourself and begin with your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lee. And good morning, Chair Lee and members of the committee. I am Devinder Malhotra, and I have the privilege and honor to serve as Chancellor of Minnesota State. With me today is Brian Yolitz, Associate Vice Chancellor of Facilities for Minnesota State. Mr. Yolitz oversees 28.5 million square feet across Minnesota, along with our committed facilities professionals across our colleges and universities. This past year, Mr. Yolitz has also been leading system-wide efforts instrumental in helping our colleges and universities navigate COVID-19. Mr. Chair, I want to take this opportunity to thank our amazing staff, particularly the frontline workers, who continue to go above and beyond in providing safe, warm, and dry environment for our students and our campus communities. Because of their work and commitment of our faculty, students, and campus leadership, we have been able to avoid major COVID outbreaks on our campuses and continue to educate students, ensuring our students are moving satisfactorily towards attaining their educational goals. In the midst of the pandemic, between spring and summer semesters, our students earned over 26,000 degrees, certificates, and diplomas. These graduates are an integral part of the economic recovery of Minnesota. We have further added to this total during the fall semester. Chair Lee, I want to thank you and the committee for the work you all did this past year. The HEPR funding and the projects you funded are more than just bricks and mortar. They are the catalysts for the success of our students. For example, the classroom and student services renovation at Normandale Community College impacts 29 different departments, including computer technology, computer science, economics, math, and reading programs. When this project is completed, we look forward to inviting you to see the outcome of your work. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Murphy, Republican Lead Erdahl, and Committee Administrator Jenny Nash for your partnership and determination in getting a bonding bill negotiated, passed, and signed by the governor. The work this committee does truly makes a difference in the lives of our students and the communities we serve across the state. This past bonding cycle, Minnesota State hosted over 40 bonding visits on our campuses. We are appreciative of the time you gave visiting our campuses, learning more about the projects, and meeting the students impacted by your work. We believe these bonding tours give you a glimpse of the experience of our students, the synergy that our campuses have with the communities they serve, and the partnerships that we have with the employers who rely on the talent that Minnesota State produces. You're also able to see firsthand the best thinking that we bring to this committee. In a few minutes, you will hear from Brian Yolitz about our rigorous bonding process and learn how the projects make their way to our final legislative request. We are hopeful that we'll be able to host this committee this fall so you can see again firsthand the impact you make. I've come to realize from these tours, bonding tours, that Representative Erdahl and I share a passion for vegetable lasagna. Chair Lee and members, Minnesota State appreciates the focus this committee has put on racial equity in the bonding process and the equitable development of infrastructure in Minnesota. This aligns well with our system-wide vision of Equity 2030, our ambitious and audacious goal approved by our board in summer of 2019, that by the year 2030, all our colleges and universities will close all educational equity gaps as they pertain to access and student success. This slide highlights the students we serve. Of the 333,000 students we serve annually, 65,000 are students of color or those of Native origin. Over 42,000 are first-generation students. Over 68,000 are Pell-eligible students and almost 9,000 veterans. And we don't just serve the student right out of high school. 70,000 of our students are over 25 years of age. As I mentioned earlier, we are grateful for this committee's recent support of bonding needs. Anoka Ramsey Community College business and nursing renovation project you approved in October, and this was the first project on the list we submitted to you last session, will allow the nursing students at Anoka Ramsey a space that will move them out of crowded hallways and into the state-of-the-art classrooms. This project is crucial for the Anoka Ramsey nursing program. The program educates 285 students, of which 38% are Pell eligible, 20% are first generation college students, and 33% are students of color. After graduation, 93% of these graduates found related employment. There is high demand for a limited number of seats in Anoka Ramsey Community College's nursing program. This bonding project you recently funded allows the college to right-size the program and provide lab and simulation spaces for more conducive to current pedagogy for nursing skills, impacting the ultimate success of the college's students in graduating, passing licensure exams, and working in the field. Mr. Chair, this is just one example of many throughout Minnesota. By funding Minnesota State's infrastructure needs, this committee is supporting all students throughout Minnesota. Chair Lee, members of the committee, that concludes my remarks. And with your permission and indulgence, I would like to turn the presentation over to my colleague, Brian Yolitz. Chair Lee.
Thank you, Chancellor Mahasra. I really appreciate the words. Mr. Yolitz, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Certainly. Good morning, Chair Lee, committee members. I'm Brian Yolitz and serve as the Colleges and Universities of Minnesota State as Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities. In November of 2020, our Board of Trustees approved a capital request for $188.2 million for the 2021 legislative session, a request that impacts campuses and communities across the state of Minnesota. Members serving on the Capital Investment Committee last session will recognize the request as those priorities from the 2020 request that were not fully funded in the final bonding bill last October. This request includes $103.7 million for asset preservation or HEPA funding and $84.6 million for the design and construction of major projects at 12 college and university campuses. As the chair requested, I'd like to walk through a brief overview of our capital development process and then talk a bit about our HEPA process. The capital requests that come to the committee are the result of an ongoing deliberate planning process that brings only the highest priorities of need to you for consideration. The process starts with the Board of Trustees guidance on the recurring campus academic and capital planning, as well as specific guidance for individual capital budget requests on a two-year cycle. At the college university levels, campus leaders use this guidance in developing their individual comprehensive facilities plans, or CFPs, that document facility conditions and asset preservation needs, as well as major capital projects to modernize our campuses and best serve their academic, student, and community support missions. In preparation for the state of Minnesota's capital bonding cycle and the even year legislative sessions, candidate capital projects are rigorously vetted, peer-reviewed, and scored before being considered as part of the Chancellor's recommendations to the Board of Trustees for their annual review and ultimate approval. Campus Comprehensive Facilities Plans, or CFPs, serve as the foundation of our capital planning and actions. Board policy calls for colleges and universities to develop and maintain CFPs, reflecting an assessment of how campus facilities support their unique institutional missions and are positioned to respond to the demographic and economic environment they are currently and anticipate operating in over the coming 15 to 20 years. The plans document both short and long-term capital investment needs, including facility renovations, remodeling and replacement, as well as asset preservation requirements. The CFPs are completed on a five-year cycle, taking about a year to complete. During that time, the college or university is guided through a deep analysis of their mission, academic programming, regional demographics, and an assessment of the facility condition and space utilization. The final product is reviewed and approved by our chancellor. That process doesn't stop there. Institutions are continually assessing the relationship between their academic programs and their facilities. I'd like to use today's capital request to guide you through the Minnesota State's capital development timeline. Today's request is rooted in the 2020 request that started with the board issuing guidance in early 2018 on their priorities for capital investment, including reducing barriers to access, enhancing student support and services, and taking care of facilities we already have, making them more flexible and efficient to operate, as well as defining the overall program size. From there, colleges and universities reviewed their comprehensive facilities plans and began developing pre-designs for candidate projects that aligned with the board and supported the board's guidelines. College university candidate projects were peer-reviewed and scored against the board guidelines. The chancellor reviewed the scoring results and made his recommendation on priorities to our board of trustees for their consideration and final approval in June of 2019. We published and shared our 2020 bonding book reflecting the approved priorities and began touring campuses throughout the fall of 2019 with this committee, the Senate, and staff from MMB and the governor's office to put a face on the project needs and priorities in preparation for the 2020 legislative session. Projects funded in the 2020 bonding bill are now on their way to the next phase of design or construction. For today's request, our Board of Trustees reviewed the outcomes of the 2020 bonding bill and considered several options for the 2021 legislative session. They ultimately decided to seek funding for those priorities not fully funded in 2020, which brings us to today and the request for the $103.7 million for asset preservation through HEPR and $84.6 million for the 12 major projects at our campuses. Work funded in the 2021 session will move quickly to the next phase of design and construction of those projects. And as a tip to the future, we are well into the development of our 2020 capital request as part of the state of Minnesota's formal bonding cycle. Candidate project pre-designs are complete and we're now entering the scoring phase, and we'll soon have a recommendation on the way to the chancellor for making his formal recommendation to our board of trustees in June. And then hopefully being able to showcase our priorities to you in tours this fall in preparation for the 2022 legislative session. Turning to HEPR, our approach to asset preservation, or HEPR, is rooted in state statute, which defines the basic uses of these funds, which is often boiled down to keeping existing facilities warm, safe, dry, and current. Assessing preservation needs is captured in campus comprehensive facilities plans, or CFPs, as I mentioned earlier. In addition, campus facilities and physical plant managers conduct annual reviews of their building systems, meaning the roofs, exteriors, interiors, HVAC systems, electrical and plumbing utilities, and alarm systems, taking into account their age, condition, and impact on campus operations. The results are recorded in our management database called VFA Facility for review and analysis and reporting. As a point of orientation for the committee, nearly two-thirds of our academic buildings were built in the 1970s and earlier, and they, along with their systems, are increasingly in need of preservation and replacement. While these there has been some investment in these buildings and systems, many of the components have gone untouched since their original construction. In the facilities, we've seen our backlog of maintenance, meaning the estimated cost of those building components and systems that have exceeded their useful life and are now obsolete, grow over time. Since 2012, we've seen the backlog grow by 57% to nearly $1.1 billion. Looking ahead over the next 10 years to the estimated needed investment in aging building components and systems, we see an additional asset preservation need of $1.2 billion. together with the $1.1 billion in backlog and the $1.2 billion in 10-year renewal, the total 10-year renewal requirements for Minnesota State College University's academic space is $2.3 billion. In preparation for our legislative session, we ask our college university leaders to review their CFPs, annual facility assessment findings, and VFA facilities reports, and prioritize their asset preservation needs for a bonding request. In the system office, we integrate college and university inputs based on core elements of campus priority, facility condition index or FCI, project readiness to move forward, as well as demographic and sector equity. We also include the statutory criteria I mentioned earlier, as well as potential impact should a system fail, opportunities for other funding avenues or means, as well as any unique aspects of impacts on individual academic programs. This represents our best understanding of our needs and frames the list of requested asset preservation priority projects at the beginning of session. When a bonding bill is passed and the HEPR funding is provided to Minnesota State, we have reaffirmed with our college and university leaders their priorities and needs for asset preservation. Sometimes things have changed at a campus over the 6 to 9 months from the original publishing of our list. We utilize the same core elements and qualifying factors to align funds to campus priority preservation and preservation projects. After dispensing HEPR funds to our campuses, we oversee design and construction work and funds utilization, moving any bid savings to meet shortfalls in other projects or to address emergent campus and asset preservation needs. Finally, Chair Lee and committee, I'd like to again circle back to where Chancellor Malhotra stopped off and say again, thank you to this committee for funding in the 2020 bonding bill. These funds are out at our campuses right now where we are advancing nearly 40 projects, 36 asset preservation projects, as well as major facility construction work at Anoka Ramsey Community College and Normandale Community College, and design for future construction at Minneapolis College and Pine Technical College and Community College. We are very grateful for your support and look forward to sharing their full impacts in the very near future. Mr. Chair, that concludes my formal remarks. Should you or the committee have any questions, or I believe we may want to defer to the very end.
Thank you, Mr. Yolich. And then members, right now, we have some time right now until 9:15 for questions for the Minnesota State System. If you have any right now, this is the time. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you for the presentation. I appreciate very much the mission that you fulfill and the contributions you make to our state. My question is about climate readiness and adaptability, and you've spoken very well and importantly about racial justice and equity. What about preparing us for the needs of a changing climate? Thank you.
So, Yolich.
Chancellor, did you want to make any initial comments, sir?
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Brian. You can answer the question.
Right. Mr. Chair, Representative Ryer, indeed, we participate in the Minnesota State's B3 Buildings, Benchmarks, and Beyond program, for including our design standards, as well as monitoring over time our utility use and consumption. We've reduced our energy consumption from 2009 by, I believe, 24%, but I'll have to check and make sure I don't have the figures right at my fingertips. But we continue to refine our operations and our capital budget guidelines for the 2022 programs puts an emphasis on sustainable and renewable energy. And also, I'd like to draw your attention to the Winona State capital project. I believe it is number 10 on our list. Is that 10 or 9? That project envisions a net zero facility, reducing the square footage of the academic space on that campus, and then through renewable energies and smart building design, making that a net zero facility for that campus.
Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick follow-up. So that also includes resilience to climate events like flooding or other types of climate-induced stresses on the system?
Mr. Yolitz.
At Winona State University, that's the intention, and that's also an element within our comprehensive facilities plans. We folded that guidance in most recently, and that'll be part of our CFPs as we go forward for our campuses to consider those very factors, weather, flooding, and the change that we're experiencing.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the testifiers, how do you see the facilities needs changing over the next 10 to 20 years as the viability of quality distance education gains traction?
Thank you.
Chancellor.
Chair Lee, thank you for that question. As changing landscape of higher education alters, and as the changing context occurs, either because of expansion in digital learning or in other ways, that'll have an impact on our facilities. But also there is tremendous changes in the way teaching and learning occurs. And with the expansion of work-based learning, that'll have an impact on our facilities too. We have incorporated this by integrating our facilities plan with our academic planning, and we want to make sure that the two move in a cohesive manner, and so we are very much aware of it that as we reduce our footprint, we need to make sure that our facilities are ready not only for our students today, but also what the needs of our students, next generations of our students would be. But I'll pass on to Brian Yolitz, and he can provide you with some additional tactical details.
Sir Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Raleigh, indeed, we continue to assess, the picture is not entirely clear of what a post-COVID environment is going to look like, but I think it is fair to say that our students are telling us they cherish the face-to-face interaction. It may not be in the classroom, but it may be in a place to study. So there's going to be continued need for facility space. It may not look like the space that maybe I went to college in a tiered classroom setting, but there is going to need to be space where students can interact with faculty to get that rich relationship and educational opportunity there. So that's something we've got a very clear sight picture on, and we'll continue to study and try to keep ahead of that.
Representative Raleigh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'm hearing from my district is that it's not just about COVID, it's about technology. And the technology is getting to the point right now where distance learning can become just as impactful in many cases, not for some of the hard sciences and labs and things like that, but more for knowledge worker type of courses that would require more reading, more presentation, things that can be delivered online. One of the things that I've heard is as we reduce the physical footprint, that will reduce greenhouse gases, that will have an impact on how we're able to address these physical plants not having as much of an impact on our climate. Is there a study or is there a subgroup that's looking at, and again, I'm thinking 10 to 20 years out, not in this next bonding session, but in the next 10 to 20 years, what impacts do you think we can hope to gain as the acceptance of these new technologies? You know, virtual reality is becoming a big thing. There's a lot of research being done on 3D printing. So as just an example, the University of Minnesota is doing some 3D printing of organs. So in the gross anatomy classes, you're able to dissect something that doesn't require, you know, cadavers. And as we're moving to those types of virtual settings, I would envision a student being able to have a 3D printer that would be able to create the object. And I'll just pick gross anatomy as an example. the ability to create a heart that would then be able to be dissected. How do you see these truly revolutionary changes being looked at in the out years of 10 to 20 years? Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Chair Lee.
Chancellor, go ahead.
Yeah, Chair Lee, Representative Riley, you know, you've really laid out the future very well. And the digital technologies and digital approaches to teaching and learning would have to be integrated with our conventional modes. And you are absolutely right. As we move forward in this direction, and as technology becomes more pervasive, and in a good way, much more intrusive in our teaching and learning elements, that it would not only change the need for these spaces, but also the design of those spaces. But I also would like to caution a little bit that as important as it is for us to work this into our planning, that we are a very heterogeneous system. We have 30 colleges across the state, 7 universities. They are heterogeneous in terms of their programmatic portfolios, in terms of their locations, their culture, history, mission. And so many of our two-year colleges focus tremendously on career and technical education. And in those areas, again, some of the futuristic digital elements will become more and more important, because you're absolutely right. When a student is working on a machine today, even in a welding lab, that machine is connected through the cloud to every other machine of the same type all over the world. And so in real time, there is machine learning occurring, which students and those who are operating those machines would have to react to. And that also poses a different kind of digital proficiency, which our students will need as they move forward. And so that is why I mentioned earlier that we upgrade our facilities plan regularly, as Brian Hewlett's pointed out, but we are also integrating our facilities plan with our academic planning. So when we are talking about new programming or redesigning existing programming, we are asking at the same time, okay, so what does that do to the type of equipment you would need, to the type of digital proficiency which the faculty and students would need, and to the type of space we need. And so our expectation is that as we move forward, our buildings will become smarter in a digital sense, but they would also, the footprint also will become smaller. Mr. Yolitz, you want to add anything to it?
I have nothing of value to add to that. Thank you very much.
Representative Murphy, can you take over for a moment while Chair Lee gets his technology working?
Ms. Nash?
Yes, Representative Lee. Sure. Thank you. That'd be great.
Representative Raleigh, are you good?
One last question that I'm satisfied. Can you briefly, and I know we're getting limited on time, can you share with us the impacts that you've seen on alternative learning organizations? I don't want to mention any of the competitors, but the alternative learning organizations that are offering classes online, what efficiencies do you think we can gain from these market pressures that are driving change in your industry? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chancellor.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative Riley, there are obviously a lot of lessons to learn from competitors, but I would also urge you that when we look at the data, many of our students who are taking online classes are also taking face-to-face classes. That number may be as high as 60 to 65%. And so what this means is that many of our students who are particularly going part-time, they are taking some of the online classes because of the fact that it is much more convenient with their work schedule or with other commitments they may have at home or otherwise. And so they'll take some face-to-face classes, some online classes. So there is a combination which these students take, those who come to us. But those programs which are completely online do compete successfully with our competitors. And I would urge, I would also emphasize that as we move online, we have also created a lot of emphasis on the quality of that programming and on the interactive nature of that programming and the virtual holistic support structures we provide to students who are completely online and not on our campuses. But to your point that the online market is becoming increasingly competitive but we want to position ourselves well for the simple reason that as public institutions, we are often the only affordable option available to these students, or we are one of the few affordable options open to these students.
Thank you, sir. I'm not sure who's next, but I'm going to go with Representative Erdahl. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, and just want to thank Minnesota State Chancellor and Mr. Yolitz for all the hospitality that they've shown the Capital Investment Committee over the years. I want to emphasize that food is not always a factor, not a factor at all, really. When I chaired, I did not hold the meatless lasagna at Wilmer against Minnesota State. But with that, I do have a question. You have your request for 2021. Do you anticipate, if you were funded this amount this year, a similar amount in the next bonding cycle, which conceivably is then 2022?
Chancellor Mahasra.
Thank you, Chair Lee. Representative Erdahl. I would defer this question to Brian Yolitz.
Mr. Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erdahl, indeed, I think our asset preservation needs, as we described, are ongoing and quite frankly significant. I think we'll continue to ask for asset preservation funding for HEPR to take care of the buildings and facilities we know we need into the future. If all of our capital projects were funded, we've got some new projects that we're currently reviewing, so I think there would be a request for capital, individual line item capital projects in the 2022 legislative session as well. Just how big that is, I don't know yet, as we haven't scored all of those. But indeed, we would be coming back to the legislature for asset preservation. And I believe our Board of Trustees will continue to prioritize that as number one priority, as well as following through on some of the design and construction that would get funded with this capital request, as well as some new emerging requirements at our campuses.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Lee. And normally the second year is the larger year, and that's when we usually do more of the HEPR funding. I'm not opposed to giving a serious look this year. I recognize that we are getting farther behind. We need to do some things to catch up, and if we can make progress this year and next year, that would be a good thing. Thank you.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, testifiers. I'm going to focus a little bit off of Representative Raleigh's statement. It was a good question there, Representative Raleigh, about the online learning, but I can tell by just my emails from just this morning that many college students and mostly parents, as we all have got those emails, don't really think the online model is a real productive model for most kids. And going from that though, so I don't want us to really focus our investments with our colleges on the online product. I want them to focus on something else that we can keep the schools more open. And part of the reason we couldn't keep our schools open is the physical design because of the pandemic. what are we doing in investments as far as looking, going back and taking another shot at this to see, can we possibly do more social distancing in our colleges if we have to? The way we design our dorm rooms, the way we design our physical class space, is the smaller classroom or open classroom, from the HVAC systems to all that. That's where I kind of come in, that I'm more of the adage that I would like to find the physical ways to keep our schools open, because I firmly feel that this is not the last bug we're going to see. Thank you.
Sir Yolitz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hout, indeed, we continue to assess our physical plant and focus on making sure that our mechanical systems are running as efficiently as possible. HEPR is an incredibly important part of that, is making sure that we've got the most modern technology for those systems. Going, replacing an entire mechanical system combat any potential transmission of a virus is incredibly expensive, and it is a long reach. In terms of our physical space, so that's exactly what our campus designs are doing now, is making our physical space more flexible, and allows us to move things around and reshape sizes, as well as room configuration to build in that social distancing. It's something that we can't do when we've got tiered classrooms with bolted in seats and chairs with folding arm desks. That's just not very conducive. But when we've got an open area that has chairs and tables that have rollers on, we're able to move stuff around and shape the sizes of those classes more effectively. But we're looking at ways, as part of our pre-design guidelines for the future, on how to build the way people move in and out of classrooms. So you have two ways in and two ways out, so you're not having queuing issues, people waiting around to get in the classroom or waiting around to get out, where they end up being in close contact with each other. It's an ongoing process that I think we'll continue to consider a host of different physical aspects that we can do and build into our physical plant in the future.
Representative, your last follow-up, then Representative Lucero.
Right, and just a statement real quick, Chair Lee, is that, and as we complex the issue, not only for health, but also safety, I know you guys have that in your plan too, so thank you for considering this as we move forward.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think those are both excellent questions and topics that were brought up here in the topic of distance learning. So having been one who has taken courses at Anoka Ramsey, North Hennepin, having graduated from Century Community College and also then taught at Hennepin Tech, as well as Metropolitan State University, and graduated from Metropolitan State University, I've had the pleasurable experience of multiple MinSCU campuses. But I think this is an excellent topic, and as I look at the requests for the campus statewide from MinSCU, exceeding $1 billion, and when we look at the requests from the University of Minnesota over a 10-year plan, exceeding $4 billion, I honestly see it's going to be a challenge, if not impossible, to actually keep up with even just the current campus and upkeep of the depreciation of the buildings, let alone the changes in education. And I think there's going to be no choice but to expedite the distance learning, online learning capabilities. And I think that what the COVID virus has done here, it's really moved us down the learning curve in the technologies to help collaborate online much faster than we would have otherwise. But we continue to see this evolution. And I honestly think that we're just going to have to continue down that path to reduce the footprint. And some of the courses, for example, many of the campuses, Anoka Ramsey, Century Community College, North Hennepin, just three, for example, right? They each offer, when it comes to whether it's a two-year degree or a four-year degree, or obviously the two-year system's not having four-year programs, but they lead to four-year programs at other colleges. But each of the degrees requires a psychology, requires an art, requires an English, right? And instead of duplicating these same courses at each of the campuses, which requires a greater footprint at each of the campuses, I think this is an area of opportunity for some of these courses that don't require hands-on. to be taught from an online perspective to allow for, again, a consolidation of the footprint to help meet the challenges. Because certainly these buildings, the roof is depreciating, the HVAC system is depreciating. All of these systems do need to have dollars spent to further upkeep. And I just see an insurmountable challenge going forward with the present size as we look forward over the next 10 years. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lucero, and thank you, Chancellor Malhotra and Mr. Yolitz for coming by. And I really appreciate the hospitality that the Minnesota State System have shown us, you know, on our first trip to Anoka-Ramsey and our last trip to Normandale, and, you know, to some of the discussions around the online learning or in person. You know, I think that, you know, we do have to find that balance, and I appreciate the system, the presidents of the system, the chancellor, and all of you having this discussion, and just know that we have to find a balance, you know, knowing the demographics of your students, some of them being first generation students, low income students, that we do need that ability to really meet in person so that everyone can have a well-rounded graduate experience. And so thank you both for coming in. Next up, we have the University of Minnesota with President Gable. Can you please state your name for the record and begin with your testimony?
Thank you, Chair Lee. My name is Joan Gable, and I'm very glad to be with all of you today. Vice Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Yurgal, I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to share information with you today. I want to recognize any members of the university's Board of Regents who are joining us remotely, as well as Dr. Wendy Reed from our Duluth campus and our student Elise Toussaint, who are also with us today, and I'll introduce them in a few moments. They have some insights to share. And I also want to acknowledge my colleagues who are with us today, Mike Bertelson and J.D. Burton, who are also on the call. So members of the committee, I'm glad to have the chance to talk to you about what's going on at the U and what this means for our capital facility needs and opportunities. Since starting in the summer of 2019, I've been very grateful to have the chance to meet with many of you, engage with you in St. Paul, and in some cases before everything shut down, meet with you in your hometowns, meet your neighbors and constituents, and explore in person how the university affects and supports your community, and also learn more about where we can improve and how we can do better. In this and many other ways, we're so grateful for your support and everything you do for the University of Minnesota. And I'll add my thanks to Chancellor Malhotra's for your support for the bonding recommendations last session. There was a significant investment in HEPR. It was instrumental to the infrastructure of our campus community across the state, the infrastructure of our state. And we're very honored and proud to be able to distribute those funds. Some design work for a clinical research facility, undergraduate chemistry teaching lab in the Twin Cities, full funding for AB Anderson on the Duluth campus, and support for the child development building back on the Twin Cities campus. These projects are not only critical for reasons that you were just discussing around how certain buildings will always need a physical presence, no matter how our learning environment evolves, and I really enjoyed hearing that conversation and look forward to continuing it with you. And these buildings are the most timely that we could be offering before you, along with the ones that we'll be discussing in a few moments. So members of the committee, our commitment to you as the University of Minnesota is to remember, enhance, be inspired by our sense of place, our connection and commitment to the state of Minnesota, but at world-class levels. It's why I wanted to be here. It's because I am honored to be only the 17th president in an institution that has a 170-year history, but where the future is brighter than ever. And I think if I could be indulged for just a second, I'd love to take a minute to talk to you about what we mean when we say world-class with a sense of place. Because what we mean is that the university is committed to serve the state, but to do so at the highest possible level with the highest quality and the deepest impact. We're a really proud community of 26,000 employees, 68,000 students. We have, as you know, a $4.2 billion budget, and all of that generates over $9 billion yearly in economic impact, which extends and is created by all five of our campuses, from Crookston to Duluth, from Rochester to Morris, and of course, here in the Twin Cities, but also in every single county through our extension program and our research and outreach centers. This work together fulfills our commitment to students, our commitment to achievement, to the clinical care that you receive, to the farms that produce our food, to the industries we serve and beyond, and then right here back at home on each of our campuses and in each of our classrooms. So Mr. Chair, the University of Minnesota, as we were just discussing, like our friends and partners at Minnesota State, has a significant facility footprint across Minnesota. We have nearly 30 million square feet of space across our system, and we have quite literally a presence in every single county in the state of Minnesota. Our facilities are aging and many are in critical need of renewal. Half of our facilities are over 50 years old. So as you can see here, 8.7 million square feet of space across our system is in poor or critical condition. And that number is rising and has risen significantly over the past 7 years. So facility renewal is a recurring, consistent, and predictable problem. It's growing. We've added over $750 million in deferred renewal in the last decade, and we have, as we were just discussing, our own backlog, which is $4.9 billion over 10 years. So we do facility condition assessment, inspections, and studies and models, and they tell us at the U of M how much and where we should be investing capital resources in order to be good stewards of our public assets. These investments suggest that we should make an annual investment of at least $200 million each year into our facilities. That's to keep up. That's not really to get ahead of the backlog. So it is a significant challenge. But the state's investment is not only critical to reversing this trend, it's really a winning proposition. It's an investment in the future of our state, from our workforce-ready graduates to our life-changing and life-saving discovery and cures. It's what feeds that $9 billion of economic impact. And it's an investment in the facilities and infrastructure themselves. So that allows us to use the resources that we might put into those facilities to enhance the student experience and make our institutions more affordable and more accessible for all Minnesotans. So by addressing capital requests this session, the state really helps us become even more sustainable, even more impactful. It strengthens our sense of place and makes us more world-class. It's a winning proposition. So members of the committee, the request we bring before you today is the culmination of the planning and years of thoughtful work that goes into managing this challenge and seeking the opportunities. Over time and with attention to these current times we find ourselves in and how that affects us. So internally, the university prepares a six-year plan annually as required by the Board of Regents. That plan looks into the past, into our legacy, but it also looks into the future and has been very carefully attended to in the current times that we find ourselves in. It becomes the official document that sets the direction for our major capital projects across the system. It includes both projects that would be funded by the state as well as projects funded from other university resources. It serves an important role in prioritizing the constrained resources that we all find ourselves in, both university and state, and it focuses our efforts on only the highest priority projects. The plan is also guided by our new system-wide strategic plan that I've discussed with many of you, which we call MPAC 2025. This plan really focuses and creates the architecture around how we are inspired by the state of Minnesota, how we are committed to the state of Minnesota, how it is our commitment to engage in world-class research, top-notch teaching, and impactful, meaningful service, undertaken in the spirit of our land-grant mission to equitably create access and innovation at home and with global impact. So we, like everyone, and as we were just discussing, are reassessing our space needs in light of the pandemic and the ability to increase work outside our physical offices or physical classrooms. We will do this in an ongoing way as our space needs change and evolve as we build for the future. And this is a very big part of our strategic planning process as well. So, Mr. Chairman, for 2021, the Board of Regents has requested a $264 million capital request focused on building off the special session bonding bill and driving resources to both asset preservation and STEM education. So HEPR, not surprisingly, remains at the forefront, touching all of our campuses and field stations, with the exception of our Rochester campus, because we don't own those facilities. So our $200 million HEPR request is key to creating the warm, welcoming, accessible campus for all of our students, faculty, and staff. By law, HEPR funds are focused on preserving and replacing existing buildings, and the funds, as you know, have strict parameters around how they're spent, from accessibility to energy efficiency. So these investments, they are not glamorous, but they are essential, and they do keep the U of M safe and functional. Our prioritization process identifies the most critical projects and helps lay them out on a timeline by campus and building. We then use a building by building strategy to identify the most critical buildings, and we engage with leadership and staff at each campus to review and confirm priorities. We allocate keeper dollars across all campuses according to a straightforward and equitable formula based on how much space each campus has and what condition that space is in. So for example, the Duluth campus represents 9.8% of the university's entire keeper eligible square footage and 8.1% of the total recorded facility needs. So based on this weighted formula, Duluth receives 9% of the total keeper appropriation. In addition to this formula-based allocation, we periodically provide additional support to other campuses from central funds, as well as use the Twin Cities HEPR allocation to accomplish urgent projects that can't be completed within a campus's normal allocation. Through these processes, a $200 million investment in HEPR would fund over 165 projects in more than 100 buildings across the entire system, home to classroom spaces, student counseling centers, research and teaching labs. So for example, HEPR will fund on the Crookston campus, the upgrading and replacing of the aging campus electrical infrastructure and natural gas distribution lines, ensuring efficient, reliable, and most importantly, safe heat and electricity distribution across that campus. In Duluth, the Humanities Building acts as the main corridor on the UMD campus where all of the buildings are connected to each other. HEPR funding would address critical needs in this space, including asbestos abatement, accessibility upgrades, fire suppression, electrical, and HVAC upgrades. On the Morris campus, HEPR will provide upgrades to the Multi-Ethnic Resource Center to transform the last remaining building from the American Indian boarding school era and enable more students to participate in programs designed to help and support Native students as they succeed and persist through their educational program. And on the St. Paul campus in the Twin Cities, our request would fund HEPR improvements at the Food Science and Nutrition Building. This building dates back to 1956. It's a classic, but it can no longer support modern analytical and plant equipment due to the lack of AC and electrical capacity in the labs and the lack of steam and potable water where we're testing and piloting different food research. And then finally, around the state, HEPR funding would complete more than 40 projects in 30 buildings across a dozen different research and outreach extensions and field stations from corner to corner across the state. So in addition to HEPR, our second request is to complete the chemistry undergraduate teaching laboratories on the Twin Cities campus. This builds off the design funding that you approved last year. Thousands of students across the campus take chemistry courses. It is the gateway, or in some cases, the bottleneck to virtually every STEM, clinical, and all of those sector careers that one might imagine one needs to take chemistry for. And we've encountered a major backlog in the lab space. So these students are also taking classes in labs designed for students from the 1930s, not from the 2020s. The remark earlier about how it does not look like the college that we attended, this one does, it still does, but it needs to evolve to reflect how chemistry is affecting students in the modern era. And to that end, I'd like to welcome our student, Elise Toussaint, to tell us more about why this project is important to her and other students on the Twin Cities campus. Mr. Chair, if I could turn it over to Elise.
Ms. Toussaint, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, everyone. Good morning. My name is Elise Toussaint, and I am a junior undergraduate student here at the University of Minnesota. My major is physiology with a chemistry minor, and I plan to utilize both of my fields going in through my gap year at Dr. Lowe's Physical Exercise Physiology Research Lab here on campus, or interning with Nike headquarters on their Move to Zero sustainability project. I then plan to attend medical school specializing in anesthesiology, where I hope to implement exercise as a source of medicine. But today I have the honor to share with you a little bit about my journey, not only as an undergraduate student, but as a chemistry minor and TA. And so my undergraduate experience as a STEM student started like most, large lectures, first year jitters, and lots of walking. Stepping into Smith Hall room 110 to be exact for the first time is an experience I will never forget. Coming from a small town in Minnesota, I didn't have much experience with a true chemistry lab. So I was a little relieved to see that the equipment looked familiar, but I was a little underwhelmed with the laboratory space. Walking into what should have felt like a top research facility ended up feeling like I was going back in time to the 70s. Being in lab for the first time brought a lot of different stresses, but one that I wasn't expecting was not being able to hear my TA. Though it was kind of cool to see the open floor plan, being able to see all the other sections, it was still really hard to focus on my TA. Though the space is difficult to navigate, this lab was the first opportunity I had to truly connect with my peers. I can proudly say that those first group members that I work with are friends of mine to this day. And it was through this first year experience with inspiration from my favorite TA and passionate professors like Dr. Blank and Dr. Dreesen that I decided to not only minor in chemistry, but also become a TA. So I owe all of my chemistry lab experience and enjoyment to my first and favorite TA. So I wanted to pass on that feeling, hopefully to spark a new interest in others. But the space doesn't always align with those goals. The biggest issue I had as a TA was a stressful physical learning environment. It was all about finding a balance between talking loud enough so all my students in the back could hear me, but not so loud that the section next to me was distracted. With the lack of open space, it also wasn't accommodating to group data analysis. My students often had to leave the lab to go into the hallway in order to do their analysis, which made it hard for them to ask me questions because I couldn't leave the lab due to safety protocol. With a course that's so heavily dependent on teamwork, the layout of the workspace is also important. In our current space, there are poles and sinks placed in the way, forcing groups to split up and disabling them from truly working together. But when I was asked to reflect on my experience as a TA, most of my reflection was filled with all the joys of teaching this course. What I hold on to most as a TA is that I'm still learning. Since this course is unlike most in the sense that it's self-guiding, my learning has gone beyond solidifying basic chemical concepts. I've learned as both a student and a TA, a new leadership style that allows me to lead my students from the balcony, so to speak, and how to be a useful resource and peer mentor. I've been able to stay connected with a lot of my students and been able to play a role in their academic journey, much like my TA has for me. So being a part of this chemistry community as a student and TA has taught me how exceptional this department is. Despite the significant hindrance that the current space presents to modern laboratory instruction, we are still able to cultivate these experiences to nourish possible future chemists. This outdated workspace has provided us students, TAs, and professors alike the only remaining barrier to learning experiences that all UMN students deserve. When a department and academic community evolves, it's frustrating to see that growth limited by the tools it has at its disposal. So as my journey comes to an end, having spent almost 4 years immersed in this chemistry culture has proven to me that with the adequate tools and spaces that support the progressive community, its growth and service to University of Minnesota's institution as well as state will be limitless.
Thank you, Ms. Toussaint, and I hope that you will continue your career over at the University of Minnesota Medical School. President Gable, I see that we have Dr. Reed here. Do you want to go to Dr. Reed next?
Yes, Mr. Chair, if I could just transition from Elise's excellent comments. Thank you, Elise. And she would normally stick around for questions, but she has to peel off to take an exam. So we will thank her and wish her. I'll just give a little context for Dean Reed's remarks. We are requesting funding to complete pre-design and design for a comprehensive renovation of the existing science building in Duluth that is affectionately known as the Old Chemistry Building. The state funded the new Heikkila Chemistry Advanced Materials Science Building in 2017. That was one of my first acts as president, was to do the ribbon cutting there with Dean Reed. It's an amazing space, very modern for many of the functions previously accommodated in the 1950s old chemistry building. But by renovating the old space, we can create the entire pipeline of STEM education in Duluth. And so to give some context and texture to that, I'm very happy to welcome Wendy Reed, Dean of the Swenson College of Science and Engineering at UMD, to tell us more, Mr. Chair.
Dean Reed, please state your name for the record and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Lee, committee members. Thank you for the opportunity and for time today. My name is Wendy Reed, and it's an honor to be here with President Gable to talk about the University of Minnesota's capital investment request. So I'm Dean for the Duluth campus, Swenson College of Science and Engineering. We are the third largest undergraduate college within the University of Minnesota system. I've been with UMD for about 2.5 years. And during that time, I've clearly seen the tremendous positive impact that the state investment has had on our campus and for our students. On that note, I'd like to thank our wonderful and strong local advocate, Vice Chair, Representative Murphy. Thank you for your continued support of UMD, including your leadership with previous bonding bills. We're very grateful for you. And both you and Representative Erdahl were monumental in helping realize the new Heikkila Chemistry and Advanced Material Science building at UMD. That building, the HCAMS building, has allowed us to keep our chemistry laboratories open to students during this pandemic. So while our faculty and students have transitioned to more remote learning modules during the pandemic, some of our work must be done in person, and we have prioritized hands-on learning and laboratory work to be in person and on our campus. And that building has been instrumental in that work. So in my college this semester, 25% of undergraduate courses and 59% of graduate courses have an in-person component. So while we adhere to COVID health and safety measures, our science labs are still in use for learning and research by both our faculty and our students. So I'm here specifically to talk about UMD's science renewal project. So we are asking for $1.6 million to help fund the pre-design and the design for this 70-year-old building. So this building is the oldest on the UMD campus, and it has immense great potential to be repurposed and modernized and serve our students for decades to come. The project will provide students and faculty in the Earth and Environmental Sciences Department and Computer Science Departments a collaborative space for learning with active learning classrooms, with laboratories and research spaces. And these classrooms will be designed with movable tables and chairs, technology, whiteboards, which allows for more successful, engaged, and collaborative student learning. In these STEM programs, the students work with and learn from our faculty who are doing amazing research in areas like robotics and cybersecurity, virtual reality, drug discovery, and material science. So we have researchers working to discover new ways to use robotics to assist people as they age and need increased care. We have people working on how to build software that is inclusive and helps us build healthier lifestyles. And we're working with cybersecurity to make sure that we can all work in safe environments. The faculty are engaging a cadre of students in this work, and an updated state-of-the-art facility will allow us to grow and really showcase this important work. This renewal project will allow us to move our entire computer sciences department into the building. Student interest and demand for computer sciences continues to be strong. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, employment of computer and information research scientists is projected to grow 15% between 2019 and 2029, which is much faster than the average growth for all other occupations. At UMD, in our last graduating class, 100% of our computer science graduates are employed or continuing their education after graduation, and 90% of these graduates, they remain in Minnesota. So our current capacity limitations result in us turning away qualified computer science students, and this project would allow us to increase our capacity and better meet student and workforce demand. So currently, right now, this facility is mostly offline. We have used existing HEPA funds to start working on hazardous material abatement, decommissioning old laboratories, and start upgrades to the outdated electrical systems. However, we need your support to move this project forward and turn an old, nearly empty building into an action-packed modern learning and research hub. So this project builds on the success of the recent completion of the HCAMS building. By strengthening our capacity to provide skilled STEM graduates to fill critical workforce demands across the state of Minnesota. The employment outlook by the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development shows a projected 5 to 10% growth in the need for STEM jobs between 2018 and 2028. So this project will help us meet that demand and really fill the STEM workforce for Minnesota for decades to come. So thank you again for this opportunity. I'm excited about this project, and I'm confident that we'll prove to be a wise investment with a tremendous long-term impact for the University of Minnesota Duluth and for the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Reed. President Gable, do you have any closing remarks before we go on to members' questions?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Dean Reed. Just in closing, we delivered to the legislature on January 12th our annual capital expenditure report, and this report is in your packet of materials. This report shows you that 95% of the 2017 to 2020 capital appropriations have been spent, encumbered, or obligated. It's gone to over 250 vendors and more than 80 cities and 20 counties around the state. And 90% of the project expenditures have gone back to Minnesota companies. So our success in quickly putting state capital dollars to work is driven by the quality of our projects and the unique procurement process that we use that's established and really efficient. We have an in-house code and regulatory process, procurement, owner representatives, engineering, commission financing, et cetera, established vendor relationships and purchasing power. And we routinely have hundreds of millions of dollars in construction projects in process. So this past year, we were managing approximately 350 ongoing projects in some stage of feasibility with design or construction valued at over $1.9 billion, thanks to you. And with our track record, we've been able to have about 90%+ of our total appropriations spent, encumbered, or otherwise obligated within 2 years. So we can confidently maintain this level of performance at any conceivable level of appropriation. So put simply, it just explains and clarifies even more why the investment in the University of Minnesota infrastructure is a really unique stimulus opportunity for our state all the time, and especially now. So Chair Lee, Vice Chair Murphy, and Ranking Member Erdahl, I just wanna thank you and extend our sincere appreciation for the opportunity to present the University of Minnesota's 2021 capital request, and for our shared partnership, which is focused on the future of the entire state of Minnesota. I'm very grateful for all that you do for the university and for the state. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude my remarks and welcome any questions you or your colleagues may have.
Thank you, President Gable. Members, do we have any questions for the President or the University of Minnesota? All right, seeing none, President Gable and Dr. Reed and Ms. Toussaint, just want to say thank you all very much for coming by before the committee, and President Gable, especially to the University of Minnesota for the work that you are doing right now to help out with the pandemic, with some of the research that's going on. We know the importance of the University of Minnesota system to the work that we have before us, you know, with regards to the pandemic and going forward. And it's really great to hear from a current student on the impact that our investment is making into this system. And so I really want to say thank you all for coming by. Members, for our next meeting next Tuesday, we'll be hearing from MnDOT on passenger rail, freight rail, and ports, and three related bills, which will be laid over. So members, this meeting is adjourned.